Our next speaker is Alan Jabbour, who, as you know, is director of American Folklife Center at the Library of Congress, a Florida native, bridging Jacksonville and Miami, I think, in many ways, a fiddler, a professional violinist, scholar. Let me introduce, please, Alan Jabbour from Washington, D.C.
While they're adjusting the mics, I'll play you a sample. This is the Key West that Stetson encountered when he went south. Play that with some relish. I am a Jacksonville-born lad to a North Florida lad, as Stetson is, and I too ended up going to South Florida at a formative period in my youth. In many ways, what I'm going to talk about resonates with that aspect of your life, Stetson. Because I must tell you all, as a native Floridian, that the Florida I grew up imagining was a Florida such as the old Florida Stetson described. It was a Florida with ties northward into Georgia and the South. It was a Florida defined by black and white in terms of races and cultures resonating together. It was a Florida that, though surrounded by water, still thought of itself as land connected to the United States. We learned in the history books, of course, that that Florida had been first discovered and settled by the Spanish, and we read about these waves of Caribbean settlement or European Caribbean settlement in Florida, but somehow that seemed distant history and unrelated to our lives. When I went down to the University of Miami in 1959, still bearing that image of Florida, I was there during the period of the latest wave of Caribbean influence into Florida. And at the time, it seemed like a unique event. I suppose the older I get in life, the less it seems to me like a unique event, the flow of Cubans coming from Cuba to South Florida. And now it seems like part of an ancient rhythm that has continually washed across Florida's shores. That was simply the latest wave then. Another wave may be going on now. I don't know the precise goings on in Florida today. But I'm applying that personal part of my life to something I noticed in the Archive of Folk Culture at the Library of Congress. When I was invited to come and make this presentation, I was asked to talk about the materials in the Archive of Folk Culture, originally the Archive of American Folk Song that the Lomaxes pioneered and recording for in the 30s and early 40s. The archives collections include much material from Florida, and when I thought about Federal Writers Project connections, I decided to look through the field recordings of the archive from Florida just to get an overview of what they contained. Now, to give you a little special glimpse of the Florida materials from this Writers Project era, I'll play some examples. You've already heard one of them now. That example, by the way, was done by Sesteta Encanta in Key West, January 18th, 1940, and it was recorded by Stetson Kennedy and Robert Cook. It was from the sound of that recording session, it was a very lively musical gathering and party. I've just given you a glimpse of it. More on that anon. But let me retrace myself a little bit. The American Folklore Society was founded, as many of you know, in the United States in 1888, about a century ago. And its founding statements about its mission were to collect American folklore. And very interestingly, folklore was, of course, defined as grassroots traditional culture. It was, of course, looked at as a communal property of the communities in which it was perpetuated as well as created anew. But within the concept, there was also a concept of folklore as representing a broader pluralistic vision for America. And thus the founding documents of the American Folklore Society describe the urgent task of documenting not only the Anglo-American traditions in the United States, those traditions brought from the British Isles, but also Afro-American traditions with connections through the Caribbean back to Africa. And it discusses other traditions as well, German-American or French-American traditions. So it's interesting to reflect that in the United States, the idea of folklore has embraced not only this grassroots sense of the people's culture, and not only this sense of communal shared culture, but also a broader national pluralistic sense that it's more than one culture being spoken about here. Certainly that impulse was behind the founding of the Archive of American Folk Song at the Library of Congress, first in 1928 by Robert W. Gordon, and in a sense recreated beginning in 1933 by John Lomax and Alan Lomax, from whom we'll hear later. The vision was a pluralistic vision, yet in another sense, I would suggest that it was a vision a little akin to the vision I had growing up in Jacksonville, where pluralism included, how shall I say, those land-based communities in the United States, the Anglo-American tradition, the American Indian tradition, the Afro-American tradition. All these had rural, land-based traditions that where ethnicity almost merged into regionalism, where there was a close interaction with the land and where you could identify parts of the country where those traditions were strong. That would even apply, say, to the German-American traditions in places like Pennsylvania and the Midwest, or the French traditions along the New England-Canada border or in southwestern Louisiana. Such traditions were all land-based traditions. One of the interesting things that seems to have happened in the 30s is that the same, I would say, pluralistic vision of a mini-cultured America was broadened out a bit more to include yet other cultural traditions, including urban traditions, including recent immigrant traditions, including occupational traditions that were tied to work and to ways of life that were associated with a living based on work. The early Florida recordings in the Archive of American Folk Song, what's now the Archive of Folk Culture, were the seminal recordings made by Francis Densmore. They came in later, but they were made during that era, the earlier era. There was Afro-American recordings, which perhaps we'll hear some samples of from Alan Lomax later. In 1935, Alan came to Florida and recorded for the archive. There were recordings by Alton Morris in 1937, sound recordings made of the classic British-American ballad and folk song tradition. So in a sense, the early recordings in the archive from Florida reflect that early pluralistic and yet land-based view of America and certainly of Florida, Indian, Anglo-American, Afro-American, not much of a glimpse of anything else. Suddenly, when we get to the late 30s, as we go through the archives collection, we encounter in Florida this sudden welling up or outpouring of documentation of other traditions within Florida, not simply the classic Anglo-American and Afro-American and Indian traditions, but also other traditions, traditions that link Florida with the Bahamas, traditions that are ethnic traditions such as the Hispanic tradition, Greek traditions, other kinds of ethnic traditions that portray, ultimately, as you look at them all as a body of documentation, portray an even more diverse and complex state. Let me lead you now through that series of recordings that I encountered as I did my little survey of Florida recordings in the archive. I've given you a sample of one. Here's another recording, also by Stetson Kennedy. This also made in 1940 in Key West. And this reflecting the Bahaman black tradition. The singer is Robert Butler. The first song I think I have on the tape is a song called Sponger Money, known in the Bahamas and in Florida. Excerpt of one more song by him, just for those of you who know it through popular music but haven't heard a grassroots version of it. Stetson's recordings, like Alan Lomax's, were also recordings that explored a broad panoply of the kinds of expressions one encounters. Here was not only a search for ancient forms preserving themselves, but also a sort of a grassroots sampling of whatever was going on creatively. Thus, he ended up at one wild and woolly party session in Key West, where he recorded again Bahaman black community, but clearly more Americanized in musical style, influenced by jazz and the like. So here was their version of Hoist Up the John B. Sails. Uh, there were other cuts from this session that were not playable in a large audience. Trombone and guitar. I think there might have been a bass in there too. This is only to prove that Stetson really was there. The other great cultural wave, of course, that starts to come into focus during this period is the wave of Hispanic influence in Florida. And here again, we have quite an outpouring of recordings in this particular period, 39-40 or so. Here's a recording from Tampa. Stetson was recording in the Ybor City community, which is Cuban Tampa cultural connections. The gentleman he got to interviewing, he started out recording a birthday party, incidentally, and I must say also about this era that the more you get into the late 30s, both with Allen and with other people like Stetson, the more you get recording not simply as careful recording of prepared presentations or recitations, but more spontaneous recordings of events. And it's a fascinating development in the whole concept of documentation that broadens out into open-ended documentation rather than careful eliciting of a song or a story. So there's Stetson recording a birthday party, and pretty soon they get into storytelling. He asks this gentleman named Martin Noriega to tell a story, and he begins telling it. He's telling it, incidentally, about a farm story from Cuba, but he describes it in English, and he says, well, this is a cracker story. And Stetson says, cracker? Well, what would that be in Spanish? He says a Spanish word, which means, in effect, farmer or something. But I was fascinated to see him translate the Spanish word as cracker and giving the Florida equivalent. I'll give you a little sample of it, but it's interesting to see spoken word as well as music. In the interest of time, I'm going to skip over the tail, which is a nice longish tail. But with that recording, you see spoken word emerging more and more as a focus of interest for recording, not simply recordings of music. Incidentally, though the archive was still called the Archive of American Folk Song at the time, Alan Lomax himself seemed to be getting more and more interested in recording not simply music, but a broader swath of cultural expression. He was doing portraits of musicians where he interviewed them at length, Jelly Roll Morton and others. And we see Stetson also, of course, from the Writers Project, broadening out from musical recordings into spoken words, narratives, stories, legends, general events. Now, something seemed to have been really in the air that guided the Writers Project workers into this broad swath of cultural documentation. Certainly the written documents also have ethnic studies in a broad sense, not simply Anglo-American or Afro-American or Indian, but Greek documents, Czechoslovakian recordings. What's reflected in the manuscript record of the Federal Writers Project also shows up in the sound recordings that came to the archive. Clearly, there was this larger, broadening vision that was being caught up by the people working on the project. It's a sign of how that vision caught up others that Alton Morris, who earlier in the archive's recordings is presenting Anglo-American balladry and folk song, somewhere along the line in the late 30s gets swept up with Writers Project and other efforts, and we find him in Florida recording, for example, Slavic recordings in Florida, or Minorcan recordings, or Greek recordings from Tarpon Springs. It's a sign of how powerful this movement was to broaden out the documentation that it swept along Alton Morris in its wake. Maybe that's what it was. So he had to do what you... Some quickie samples of other ethnic groups recorded in this era. In the classic sense, probably not a folk song. Clearly taught as part of a conscious ethnic maintenance program done in the community, but interesting nonetheless, and equally interesting that the project was paying attention to such things. My Slovak tongue. Here, recording a Minorcan song from St. Augustine. There was still and still is a Minorcan community in that area. Cantare babadria, zan zan zan, la pascua sanaria. Greek song from Tarpon Springs. She explained to Alton Morris, who was not a Greek specialist, certainly, that this was a spiritual brother song. Just a moment. Stop there. Well, interestingly enough, as you go on through the archive collections from Florida after this period, there's a reversion to Anglo-American and Afro-American recordings in the later 40s and into the 50s. Alton Morris goes back and records Sacred Harp again. Some recordings come in from the Florida Folk Festival movement in the 50s and 60s. But essentially, the older view reasserts itself until you get all the way up to 1977, where the American Folklife Center has been created at the library, and where the Folklife Center undertakes a project investigating the phenomenon of ethnic radio broadcasting around the country. And so out of that project, there show up again from Tampa and Miami recordings of radio broadcasts in a variety of languages and serving and addressing a variety of cultural communities within the area. So let me make a couple of Cracker Barrel conclusions from all this. I think this era in the 30s was an amazing era for folklore in that took the idea and the impulse and the history of folklore collecting, and it broadened it out. It experimented imaginatively. There were many young people getting involved in these efforts, and their total contribution was to broaden out the concept of what needed to be paid attention to. You see through it a concept of American pluralism emerging that's a broader and more incorporating concept that includes urban, occupational, all ethnic traditions, includes a more contemporaneous view of folklore. That view, in a sense, reasserts itself ever since, periodically. It certainly is very similar to the view that the American Folklife Center may have had in the 70s when it began undertaking projects around the country. So that seemed to have been going on actually throughout the country with the folklore efforts and with the Writers Project. I may mention parenthetically that though we were speaking formally here of the Writers Project, the old joke about this being the era of alphabet soup really has something behind it, because the more you look at the era, the more you see that though there was the Federal Writers Project, and there was a theater project and a music project, and then the Library of Congress had the Archive of American Folk Song, in fact, there was a lot of switching back and forth and combining of efforts. And what ultimately emerges is a network of bright intellectual, creative young people who had a bunch of different jobs and managed to get together and to share their energies and direction one way or another. And it's finally that network that was the network that contributed so much that we still sense is so exciting about the era, whether we lay the work to the door of the Archive of American Folk Song or whether we look at the Federal Writers Project. It wasn't so much the project as the network that was operative at the time, the network that brought together the Allen Lomax and the Stetson Kennedys and others. At the Florida level, as I look at those recordings, I see again this oscillation between the old Florida and the new Florida, but also between not old and new, but the northward-looking Florida connected up to the rest of the continental North America, and the Caribbean and water-oriented Florida looking out to the Caribbean, looking out through the ports to the wide world around it. And those two Floridas, in a sense, are always there. They're there today. They were there then. But our attention shifts sometimes in one era to one of the Floridas, and in another era we begin to bring out and emphasize the other. I would say that in this period of the later 30s, our attention shifted. Just as Stetson went south to Key West, the attention of Florida generally shifted from the old Florida to the new and broader Florida that included that old Florida, but also included the Caribbean littoral and the view out through the ports to the wide world. Finally, at the organizational level, as I go through all these recordings from Florida, I sense a point that I want to make here today, and that is, it was an era, that late 30s period, of an era which, as terrible as the Depression was also an era where young, creative people were given responsible tasks to do. And I think one of the earmarks of that era stems organizationally from the fact that young, creative people were given real responsibility. Through that, they made their contribution, and it's because they were young that we still have them here to share their story today. It's a great good fortune of ours, but I think there was something about the giving of responsibility to young, creative people at the time that indelibly marked the era. With that, I'll stop. Thank you very much.
Thank you all for that wonderful view from